good night.
Hello, cocktail lovers. Welcome to Paris Cocktail Talk, the show brought to you by the 52 Martinis Guide to Paris Cocktail Bars. I'm Forrest Collins, and I'm here to talk to you about cocktailing in the French capital and bring you other small batch spirits news from France and beyond. And this month, it's a festive month, December, obviously. We've got the holidays. So I thought it would be a really fun time for us to talk a little bit about champagne, and more specifically about grower champagne, because it seems like we're hearing more about that lately. So I invited Thierry Givon down to the studio. He is here. He has a company called Wine Tasting in Paris. I just had like a momentary blank. Wine Tasting in Paris. So we're really excited to have him here. It's his first time on radio. So welcome, Thierry.
Thank you, Fabrice.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do here?
My name is Thierry. I'm coming from Burgundy. I was born in Burgundy, and I'm living in Paris for more than 20 years now. And a few years ago, something like 5 years ago, I created a company called Wine Tasting in Paris. The goal is to propose wine tasting initiations, French wine tours, or to introduce mostly foreigners who want to discover French wines and the one who don't have time to go in some of the wine regions. So the in Paris for a few days, and they want to discover French wines, and that's what I do.
Great. And for the listeners, I've experienced some of the wine tasting with Thierry, and I can highly recommend it. We'll put some links to his tastings and to his website in the show notes. Okay, so we're going to talk about champagne. So listeners probably are familiar with the basics. Champagne, it's a sparkling wine. It's made in the region of Champagne. It's made from three grapes, generally Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, right? I always have a hard time saying that one. That's the real, like, cut and dry basics. Is there anything else in general you think that the listeners should know about champagne before we get into the specifics of grower champagne?
No, it's what you say. So it can be called champagne only if the grapes are coming from the Champagne region. You have three main grapes, as you said, even if globally you have seven grapes otherwise in the appellation, in the production specification. But also the fact that the specific thing about champagne is that you have a second fermentation in a bottle. So the gas is coming from this long second fermentation in a bottle, which can be different compared to a Prosecco, for example, which have a second fermentation in a big tank. So it's more bottle per bottle. That's what will give the specificity and the quality of champagne compared to some of the sparkling wines.
Okay. Now, as I said before, and I've said this to you when we were talking before the interview, I feel like we're hearing a lot more about grower champagne these days. So can you maybe explain to the listeners what the term grower champagne means, and also include the French word for it, so people here are familiar with what they're looking for?
So yeah, grower champagne, which is called champagne de vigneron in French, so wine grower champagne, in fact, it's one of the category of champagnes. It's opposite to big houses of champagne. You have three big categories in champagne. You have the big houses, which is the one that everybody knows and the one you see everywhere in the world. You have some co-ops, cooperatives, that will also produce a champagne, like Nicolas Feuillat, which is a big brand of co-ops. And the last part is grower champagne. That means small independent winemakers who, instead of selling their grapes to the big house, they keep their grapes and they produce the champagne by themselves directly into their wineries. So the champagne has been mostly developed by brands. Because of the process, you need to have big, lots of place, lots of means, lots of technical material to produce champagne. So it's more complex than the classic wines. So that I think that's why in the past, mostly the big brands are the one who developed the champagne. The first one, Ruinart, has been created in 1729, so a long time ago, on the first brand of champagne. But after, you have, of course, Moët & Chandon, Veuve Clicquot, Tétinger. You have many big brands. And still today, since mostly the Second World War, it's mostly those big houses who hold the market of champagne and produce big part of them.
Yeah. I don't know if you know the statistics, and I can't remember, but I read it's a really small portion of the champagne from the of champagne that comes from these small independent grower champagnes.
Yeah, so it depends what you talk about, revenues, about number of bottles, etc. Globally, to give you big numbers, the production of champagne is something like 220 million bottles per year. And you have almost 70 or more than 70% produced by the big brands, big groups. And after, you will have, so the rest will be something like co-ops for 8%, and after 15 or 16% of small global champagne.
Okay. I also hear a lot of people talking about the good value that you find in grower champagne. So can you unpack that a little bit for me? Can you talk about if what people mean by that is it's good value because it's priced well, because maybe the bigger champagne houses are also putting a lot of money into marketing, or is it good value because it's just so well made because, I don't know, maybe it feels more artisanal? Or tell me, is it a good value? And if so, why?
Yeah, it is a good value most of the time. And it's the reason is quite everything what you said. On one side, for sure, big brands have put lots of money in marketing, packaging, communication campaigns, etc. That's why you see them everywhere. They're really strong. And the price, the final price for champagne is more relative to the to those all those costs and the brand value than on a production cost by themselves. To produce champagne, the cost is quite the same for every champagne producer, or the factor can be between 1 to 5, or maybe even not less, 1 to 10. But in terms of value on the market, after the factor can be, the price of the champagne can be can have a bigger difference between the small one and the big brands. But also the big difference for grower champagne, the big brands buy grapes. So that means they need lots of grapes. When we talk about big brands, we talk about people producing like Moët & Chandon. It's 32 million bottles per year. So it's a giant wine producer. It's more kind of champagne factory, to be honest. That means they have to buy grapes coming from everywhere in a region, in every part. And they have thousands of small wine growers selling the grapes to them. So that means that champagne is always a blend, but for big houses like that, it's a blend of blend of blend. Mm. So that means at the end, of course, they cannot control the quality and the specificity of all the small terroir of champagne. They have to blend everything. So even if they control who is selling the grapes, the control of quality cannot be the same. A small grower champagne, they use only their own grapes coming from their own vineyards. That means they can be on the field in the vineyard for every day during the year. They know exactly what they will get at the end of the year. They decide that specifically the date of the harvest and when the maturity is perfect, when they're sure they will have what they want to have in their tanks, and after they can sort the grapes. So everything is different in terms of size. A small grower champagne can be everything between 2,000 to 200,000 bottles, but it's still much more, much less than the 32 millions of Moët & Chandon. So, of course, all the attention they put in making their wine will be different. And at the end, the big difference is also is that you will have those champagne coming from small independent terroirs. So that means each of them will be different. When you blend grapes coming from everywhere, you have no difference. Your area is all the difference of terroir. And for small ones, they use only their own grapes. So each of them will be coming from different villages, sometimes different plots, different vineyards in the same villages. So at the end, the taste of champagne will be different. So you'll have more diversities and something which is more, let's say, personal. You can more taste the difference between two small grower champagne.
Hmm. Yeah, I did want to touch on that. So I think you've kind of covered it, the idea of whether or not terroir is more is better expressed by grower champagnes because there's not these big blends. So so I think that's very interesting. Are there any other generalizations that you can make about sort of larger commercial champagne versus grower champagne? So maybe more expressive about terroir, smaller, anything else, maybe taste-wise that differentiates the two?
Yeah, after you have to understand that for all the brands, bigs and smalls, they are producing different cuvées, different kind of product. So even in for big houses of champagne, you can have high quality champagne, which are most of them more expensive, of course, but it will be a small part of the production. And after, there will be the big sale, the best seller, which is most of the time a kind of standard product. And when you produce a product like that, millions of bottles of the same product, it's more kind of industrial process. So they want to secure everything, secure the taste, secure the fact you have no bacteria, secure everything. So maybe they will use more sulfites, maybe they will. So it's, again, more an industrial process. They cannot take any risk. So that means that's why you will have always something which is more a kind of standard product. If you sometimes I have guests from US, I have more sometimes beer drinkers coming to my tasting room, and what I say, it's same difference between a big brand of beer, even a good one, and small breweries that we are producing specific beer with specific taste, etc. So big brands, they can never take any risk, so they will have a kind of standard product that will be pleased by anybody on the market, everybody. That's why the taste is more neutral, in fact. And small grower champagne, they can take more risks. They don't care. They are not focused on the final drinker, on the market. They just want to produce the champagne that they like first. And that's why you'll have more diversity. So maybe this champagne, it won't be appreciated by everybody on the market, but they don't care. But for if you like it, it's one compared to another one, you have something which is more specific. So they want to have the expression of the terroir, and they can take more risks. So one year, they can develop a small batch of production, a small cuvée, and maybe it will be something like 5,000 bottles, 10,000, and something specific that will be pleased by the people who want to follow this brand and want to discover new taste or champagne.
And what does that mean for vintages? Because I'm presumably, so like when bigger houses decide, okay, we're going to make a vintage this year, it's because all across the board, it was a good year for champagne. I mean, so is it different for grower champagne because they can have a better idea of this was a great year for these particular grapes in this location. But I feel like if they're being blended together, it might have been a better year for certain grapes and certain. Does that make sense, or is it a pointless question?
No. So we didn't uncover that before, but most of champagne, as we said, are blends, and that means they blend not only different origin of the grapes and different kind of grapes, the three main grapes that we mentioned, but also they want to blend different years of production so that they can avoid the difference you can have for every weather. The weather of every year will be different, so they blend different years. And if you take, for example, in big brands houses of champagne like Veuve Clicquot, for example, they can blend more than 100 different wines. So it's really a big blend, and by doing that, they can avoid the differences of every year. Depending on the weather you had, they want the taste to be the same. So it's more easy for them because they have many wines in stock, so they have tanks or barrels of wines that they keep, sometimes wines of 5 or 10 years old. And the small producer, they cannot have all this kind of wine keeping staying in tanks and barrels for many years. So most of the time, they do just a few vintages. And that means that, as you said, they decide to do a vintage when they consider that the quality of the harvest is so good that instead of blending with other years, they will keep it and produce a specific champagne with one specific taste of the year. But it's up to the winemaker to decide to do that or not. The only difference, they have to declare, and after they have to keep the champagne for more than 3 years on aging. Instead of only 15 months for the classic champagne, which is a blend. So it's a longer aging process. Usually it's more quality. And here again, they will select the best vineyard they have. A vintage is only 5% of the production globally in champagne. Mm. So it's a small part. It's only for the top quality one.
So I feel like in the Anglo press, you know, I'm reading more about grower champagne. I'm reading about it's increasing in popularity. I read an article, I didn't confirm the statistic, but exports to the U.S. From grower champagne went from about 55,400 cases in 2011 to 83,300 cases in 2015. I read that in an article. I didn't get it from a study, so I don't know if that's for sure. But having, you know, regularly reading press, it just feels like they're talking about it over there in the U.K., in the U.S. So why do you think that we're seeing more attention, other countries are paying more attention to grower champagne?
So first, I really think it's this kind of trend is quite new. It seems that it's mostly developed during the year after the year 2000 or just before. For example, a guy like Anselm Celos really started to develop high quality grower champagne, and lots of young winemakers which arrive on the market after their parents or grandparents started to develop also things like that. If we go back to the numbers, it is still really small. We talked about the global numbers, and 70% of the champagne are sold by big houses. But in terms of export, it's 90%. So 90% of the export sales are big houses of champagne. Only 10% are coming from small wine growers. Even if, as you said, it's every year it's more and more popular. And because it's still new, that's why it's becoming more popular just now. And people want to discover that, especially the connoisseurs, the sommeliers, the importers. They have to keep big brands because it's what the market is asking for. Even in France, if you have a wine shop, you cannot sell just Gaure or Champagne. You need to have a Ruinart, a Moët et Chandon, Veuve Clicquot, because it's what some people will taste. But after, most of them try to have also a separate offer, something different, something more interesting. And as a sommelier, people they prefer to propose this kind of discovery instead of selling the same thing that everybody proposes on the table. It's more interesting for them also. And lots of connoisseurs, they want to taste things. You talk about this kind of thing for Champagne, but globally, people are more and more interesting about wine. You have lots of blogs about wine, TV shows about wine, newspapers, magazines, etc. So, and those people are talking about quality wine. So that means more people want to discover new things, share their tasting notes, share their tips, share their brands, and that's why it's becoming even more and more popular. And the last thing I want to say about that is that it's surprisingly for some small brands like Veuve Fournier, it's a brand I work for in my tastings. In fact, for them, they told me that it's more easy to find an importer in a country, like one for US, one for Germany, whatever. And after, they trust them, and those guys will take care of the sales. And it's more easy for them than try to develop the French market, because for the French market, they have to visit every wine shop, every restaurant, etc. So it's more complex, or to have a wine sales reps, but you're never sure about the quality, and those guys are taking care about many, many brands in the same time. So they prefer to develop more export sales. They do some fairs all over the world, and after, when they have an importer. So today, for the small brand like Veuve Fournier, it's 80% of their sales are on export market and not in France.
Okay.
Globally, the export is 50-50, so 50% in France today and 50% outside of France.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you as well. So I feel like from the Anglo perspective, there's been an increased interest in it. And I feel that way in France, but I spend a lot of time with people who like wine and are into wine and food. So I feel like I might have a skewed view. Have you noticed that the French in general are showing more interest in Gaure Champagne, or not so much, or plateau steady, or not so much a trend here?
No, also, as I said before, also, yeah, well, like some sommelier, for example, we want to propose other things, etc. You will still have people, they want to have a kind of, it's a kind of reinsurance to choose a brand that they know. And you have people doing an excellent marketing job, like Ruinart, for example, when they redesigned the bottle in the year 2001, I think, with something transparent, a specific shape, etc. It's something that they position more on a higher market. And now you have lots of people they prefer to have a Ruinart because they consider that it's much better than any other champagne because the bottle is nice, etc. And so those people, they will choose that on the wine list because they won't take the risk to choose a champagne that never heard of. But as you said, you have some offers in small wine shops, in wine bars, and yeah, also on the French side, I noticed that some people really want to discover Gaure Champagne more and more.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the maybe disadvantages of Gaure Champagne, I think often we're buying champagne to take to someone's house. So you always want to take, you know, this. You can see I've brought you quality because it has a name that you recognize. So I think that makes it harder too for, you know, people that might not know all the names of some of the not so big houses. So if people do want to start exploring more Gaure Champagne here in Paris, are there particular bars that maybe you recommend that they go, or shops maybe that have a nice selection so they can try it at home?
In terms of wine shops, you have first, for example, some global wine shops like La Vigna, which is one of the biggest in Europe, which is close to Madeleine, between Madeleine and Opéra. Also, the gourmet store of Galerie Lafayette have a nice selection of Gaure Champagne. But after, I know two specific addresses in Paris. You are first the Dilettante, which is a kind of wine shop, wine bar, and tasting room specifically for Champagne, which is in the 6th, in Saint-Germain-des-Prés. And after, I discovered also a small wine bar, which is called L'Extra Brut in a Ninth District.
Okay.
Not so far from
here. Where in the Ninth?
I don't remember the exact address.
Okay.
But it's a small, it's both also a wine bar, but a wine shop, but you can drink champagne here. And it's only for champagne and mostly Gouer champagnes. They have a selection of something like 300 different champagnes.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. I'm familiar with Dilettante. It's a Fanny that has that place, right? Yeah, but I haven't. L'Extra Brut. I will definitely give that a try. It sounds like a good discovery. So we are in December. People are going to be having parties. I'm going to be having parties. I'm going to be going to Christmas parties. It's going to be one big party. So can you recommend to me or to the listeners a great bottle of something sparkling? And I know we're talking about grower champagne, but even if you want to like step out of the champagne category, what can I serve? What can I take to parties? What's your best recommendation for that?
So the one I will first recommend will be the one I trust. It's a small brand. I work with them, as I say, for 3 years. It's the Fournier Fils are in Vertu. So Vertu is in the middle of Côte des Blancs, where they produce more Chardonnays. And it's a village which is classified as Premier Cru. That means the quality of the soil is better than the average of Champagne. And the Fournier Fils, it's a family winery established in 1856 in the same village. So they have lots of knowledge, high quality wine, quality champagne. Their Blanc de Blanc is really nice. Champagne are between 28 to 30, 32 euros for the classic one. And they have also vintage, of course. They have a clos. They have a clos of the Faubourg Notre Dame. So like a small plot spread by walls, like in Burgundy. So it's a really high quality one that I recommend. If I want to take something which is really small Gouer champagne, it's a discovery I've made a few months ago in a wine shop in Burgundy. I found a champagne which is coming from Champagne, of course. It's called C.H. Piconnet, and I look on a back label, and the production for this bottle was 1,500 bottles only.
Wow.
And it's a Blanc de Noir, and I contact the guy after. We've been in contact. I order some of the champagne to use in my tasting. It's really a good one, and it's interesting to see that you can have people, because they have some vineyard in the family, but the guys just started to produce champagne something like 3-4 years ago only. So it's really nice to see that some young winemakers can start a brand of champagne still today. So 1,500 bottles, it's really a limited number. And after the last thing, maybe I will talk about the brands, which is something in between the small and big brands. It's Drapier in French, okay. Which is also in Côte des Bars. It was a favorite champagne of Charles de Gaulle, because he used to have a country house not so far from this winery in Colombelles-les-Deux-Églises. And so Drapier, it's one of the first brands of champagne who started to produce some nature wines and Brut Zero without any sulfites in it and without any sugar. Sulfite and sugar both. And it's really high quality champagne. So and it's mostly made with Pinot Noir. So they have blends, but also lots of Blanc de Noir. And it's really something that I appreciate. And you can find it more easily than the Fournier or Piconnet, which is really difficult to find in Paris.
Good. Well, I might email you to remind, show me how to spell those names, and I'll put them in the show notes so people can try to find them at least and have some good bottles for their holidays and other times. We talked a little bit already about, you do tastings. Do you have anything coming up that you want to tell the listeners about that they might want to get in on?
Yeah. So, I don't have a specific tasting about champagne, even if it's something I'm still thinking about it for a long time. But in all my classic tastings, which is called French Wine Tour, when I propose people to discover the wine coming from all over France, we always start with champagne. So I take 15, 20 minutes to explain champagne, what is it, where it's coming from, how they produce champagne. And after we test the champagne from a small grower champagne. So it's... even if I don't have specific testing about that, I always include champagne in my testings. And I have the French Wine Tour, I have 3 to 4 times a week. So
great. Well, as I said, listeners, I have been to Thierry's tastings and I highly recommend. So, and I have to tell you something. Everybody loves you, by the way. This is probably going to embarrass you, but your name comes up from time to time because I do know people in food and wine. And I was just having lunch with my friend Jennifer Greco, who you might know. She does tours with Paris by Mouth. And she said, who are you interviewing today? And I said, oh, Thierry, Wine Tasting in Paris. She said, oh, he's great. Tell him I said hello. And that's the reaction that everybody says whenever your name comes up when somebody's asking for recommendations about wine tastings. And oh, yeah, he's great. So your reputation precedes you. So there you go, listeners. It's not just me that thinks Thierry's great. It's many other people. So check out his site. Take a look at the show notes. Go see what his tastings are. And so thank you very much for taking the time to come down and talk to me about some bubbly things. Great. And I think that's pretty much a wrap for our talk on grower champagne this month. If you're looking for more cocktail talk in between shows, head to our site, www.52martinis.com. If you'd like to put me in your pocket and have me with you all the time, download our iOS app, Paris Cocktails. It's a guide to Paris cocktail bars, only available for iPhone right now, but, you know, we're going to try to expand that. As always, thank you to today's guest, Thierry from Wine Tasting in Paris. Thank you to you listeners for tuning in. Or downloading or listening to World Radio Paris. Additional thanks to World Radio Paris and Thomas for editing and production. Don't forget, he's got his own podcast called Uni Talks. Thanks to Emily Dilling of Perry Paysan for show notes and web assistance. Thanks to Sun Little for the music that we use. We will put links to all of these people in the show notes. As usual, we remind you to please drink responsibly. And finally, just one little moment to read an iTunes review from this week. This one's from Tamara, and she says, we are light, fun, and easy to listen to episodes that explore cocktails and culture. Based in Paris, though anyone that enjoys cocktail talk will get something out of it, 52 Martinis has been on the cocktail beat for over a decade, so she knows her cocktails. So we really appreciate getting those reviews. I like doing the podcast, but it's nice to know that I'm just not doing it, shouting into the void. So if you like what we're doing here, drop a review. And even if you just kind of like it and you have a suggestion, drop a review, put your suggestion in there. There's a link to where you can drop a review in the show notes. I think that's about it. So until next time, cheers. In the river, darling,